Don't move for 2 minutes anyhow, and then you can, because you'll be laughing at this week's humor from Washington. I'm your Saturday evening host, Ted Steele. We'll begin with Petula Clark's latest, This Is My Song. Humor in Washington. Sometimes it's a little hard to find, but there's always something to laugh at. Ray Farkas of NBC News reports.
Well, after a couple weeks of relative speechlessness, for him anyhow, Vice President Humphrey was back in mid-season form this week. At a Wednesday night dinner of the National Space Club, the Vice President was the main speaker, and he let everybody know right away what kind of evening it was going to be.
But I think I know how boring a speech can be because I have to listen to all of mine. And you only have to listen to him once in a while. Tonight you're going to have to listen not as long as I had contemplated, but twice as long as you had thought.
And just a little while later, Mr. Humphrey reminded his audience of just how impressed he is with his own importance.
I made a note or two on the program. I've noticed that this organization, the Space National Space Club, has three vice presidents. My gosh. President Johnson wonders why he needs one.
Mr. Humphrey, of course, as any good politician, is sensitive to the gentle winds of political change.
There's a different attitude about the vice president these days than there used to be. And I was in this same banquet hall here just about 2 weeks ago. And when I came in, the Marine Band was here, and they struck up almost right up to the point, almost hail the chief. They didn't quite make it. They had hail Columbia. But when I used to come on in, well, you were lucky if you'd get the D.C. police band. And the whole reason for it is since the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, the Succession Amendment. I told the president tonight, he's out at Nashville, Tennessee, I said, there'll be no coup tonight, Mr. President. Don't worry.
Speaking for the loyal opposition, Senator Thruston Morton of Kentucky at a hearing to discuss air pollution.
Extensive hearings that we had and the evidence that we took, of course, doesn't bear out this the statement that a package of cigarettes a day takes 10 years off your life. I'd say that two nights on Bourbon Street, New Orleans, will take off 10 years of your life.
Senator Thruston Morton takes a look at life. On Bourbon Street, that is, not Washington. Ray Farkas in Washington, reporting for Monitor.
Some collector's items in our weekly roundup of Washington humor.
What is a square? A square is another of the good old words that's gone the way of love, modesty, and patriotism. Something to be snickered over or downright laughed at. Well, you know, it used to be that there was no higher compliment that you could pay a man than to call him a square shooter. But today, a square is a guy who volunteers when he doesn't have to. He's a guy who gets his kicks from trying to do a job better than anyone else. He's a poor sucker who gets so lost in his work that he has to be reminded to go home. This nut we call the square gets all choked up when he hears the sound of his daughter's laughter or holds out his arms to his son's first steps. He even believes in God and says so in public. A square is the guy you see going to church on Sunday while you're on your way to the beach. He's the one who really believes in democratic government, the rights of minorities, and all those other square principles. You know that square John Glenn says he gets a funny feeling down inside when he sees a flag go by? Says he's proud that he belonged to the Boy Scouts and the YMCA? How square can you get? A square is a guy who lives within his means, whether the Joneses do or not. And he tells his son it's more important to play fair than to win. Imagine a guy who thinks Christmas trees should be green and Christmas gifts should be hand-picked. He believes in honoring mother and father, do unto others, and that kind of stuff. So will all you poor fools answering this description please stand up, you misfits in this brave new age, you dismally disorganized, improperly apologetic ghosts of the past, stand up and be counted. You squares who dignify the human race. You squares who hold this thankless world in place.
That was Mike Douglas at 16 past the hour. You're squared off on the Monitor Beacon. Now at the Monitor Sports Desk, here's Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Ted. Hello there, everybody. Southern Illinois won the National Invitation Basketball Tournament today. They overcame a 12-point second-half deficit to defeat Marquette 71-56. Walt Frazier scored 21 points for the Southern Illinois Salukis and was named the tournament's most valuable player. In the consolation game for third place, a 44-point performance by Bob Lloyd led Rutgers to a 93-76 victory over Marshall, gave Lloyd a four-game tournament record total of 129 points. Tonight, NCAA tournament action, four regional finals, Boston College in North Carolina in the East, Virginia Tech in Dayton in the Mideast, SMU Houston in the Midwest, and Pacific UCLA in the Far West. Big Ten faculty representatives have set a Tuesday deadline in the University of Illinois $21,000 athletic slush fund scandal. Illinois must dismiss the three coaches involved by then, football coach Pete Elliott, basketball coach Harry Combs, and his assistant Howie Brown, or the conference will definitely suspend the school. In baseball, exhibition results, San Francisco beat California 6-4, Cleveland 8, Chicago Cubs nothing, Pittsburgh took Philadelphia 2-1 in 13 innings, Atlanta 4, New York Mets 3 in 10 innings, St. Louis 6, Houston 2, Chicago White Sox 6, Washington nothing, Boston nipped Detroit 3-2, and Cincinnati defeated the New York Yankees 4-1. New York Mets shortstop Roy McMillan suffered a temporary dislocation of the right shoulder on a throw to the pitcher, and Chicago White Sox catcher Dwayne Josephson released from the hospital after being hit near the top of the head by a bat swung by Washington's Frank Howard, and they call hockey tough. And speaking of hockey, in the National Hockey League, Boston came up with three third-period goals within the space of 3.5 minutes, beat Detroit 5-3. The Red Wings played without ailing Gordie Howe, whose streak of appearing in 259 consecutive games thereby came to an end. In the World Amateur Ice Hockey Championships in Vienna, the United States upset Sweden 4-3 on defenseman Marty Howe's third-period goal with the U.S. a man short. Tournament favorites Russia, Canada, and Czechoslovakia also won. In the NCAA Hockey Tournament consolation for third place, Michigan State turned back North Dakota 6-1. It's Boston University and Cornell in the championship game tonight. In the world of golf, Dan Sykes, Jacksonville, Florida's only touring professional, widened his lead to three strokes after the third round of the $100,000 Jacksonville Open. He shot a 2-under par 70 for a 54-hole score of 206. Gabe Brewer's second at 209. Bob Golby and Chuck Courtney tied for 32-10. Julius Burrows, winner of last weekend's Florida Citrus Open, has a 213. In horse racing, the weather forced Aqueduct to close for the second straight day here in New York. But at Gulfstream in Miami, Chinatowner won the $25,000 added Canadian Turf Handicap and the $18,200 Chaladin Stakes at Pimlico went to Gala Performance. In track and field, world shot put record holder Randy Mattson of Texas A&M broke the NCAA discus record with a toss of 200 feet, 7¾ inches. In skiing, Jean-Claude Keely won the men's downhill to lead France to victory in the American International Team races at Vail, Colorado. The French scored 231 points to edge Austria by 3. The United States was third with 148, followed by Switzerland with 123, and Canada with 80. In pro football, veteran quarterback George Blanda, among four players given their outright release by the Houston Oilers. A fifth player, flanker Charlie Hennigan, traded to San Diego for flanker Sammy Taylor. A sixth player, cornerback Bernie Parrish, announced his retirement. Harmon Killebrew of the Minnesota Twins, who are playing a four-game exhibition series against Kansas City in Caracas, says that playing baseball Venezuelan style is completely different from the USA. For one thing, the players warm up and later take to their positions to the strains of Paso Dobles, the traditional music of the bullfight. Killebrew says he enjoys that, but what upsets him are the armed soldiers in each of the dugouts. Says Harmon, it sort of makes you kind of jumpy to have soldiers walking around in here, particularly when you don't understand their language. How about that? And that's the late sports news, Ted.
Okay, Mel. Mel Allen brings us late sports news every weekend here on Monitor.
A new song by the Anita Kerr Singers. It's One in a Row.
And we're going to make that two in a row with this number. Wanderley and Chikanga. And my good friend, if you're in Illinois, northern Indiana, southeastern Michigan, or southern Wisconsin, you probably heard that on WMAQ Chicago. Wherever you're listening, stay with us for the rest of Saturday Evening Monitor, following the latest news. I'm Ted Steele.
This is David Brinkley. I'll be with you Monday through Friday with my daily reports on NBC Radio.
Don't move, just leave your dial, Monitor. Lean back and stay a while, Monitor. Here's Monitor.
You'll meet a man who gives personality lessons to politicians. 3 minutes from now on Monitor, you'll hear an exciting moment at a steer auction. All that for you, and here's for me. Well, it's for all of us. Played by Sergio Mendez and Brazil 66.
Hey, there's a hum in the air. Hey, 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 every star's gonna spin. Hey, something's saying out there. Hey, something's gonna begin.
Fire in the sky.
Hey, 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 and the moon's gonna die.
Hey, my friend, if you have any idea of ever running for public office, you'd better have your personality checked. At least that's what Michael Brown says, and he's an expert on the subject. A former actor himself, Mr. Brown has been coaching political figures for about 15 years. He was interviewed for Monitor by reporter Charlie Holmes.
Michael Brown, you help film and television stars to get across to the audience. Why do political figures come to you for help?
Well, wouldn't you think that in the view of what's happened recently, that the political figure knows that media can help elect them to office? We've had two wonderful examples of that out on the coast. And prior to that, we've had Cabot Lodge, who was an actor. We've had other people in every walk of life who were actors at one time. I think Dirksen at one time was a performer.
Are you saying, in a sense, then, that a successful politician must be a good actor?
No, I'm saying that a person, to know his territory, must know his map.
Mm-hmm. I believe, in reading about your work, that you stress commonness as an almost vital necessity for political success. What do you mean?
I mean identity. I mean that people who can identify with somebody, who would like to be with somebody, who would like to be like somebody, is the common touch. I liked when Adlai Stevenson's sole of his shoe was shown. I liked when a Thomas Dewey took off his coat and threw it on the floor. I even liked what Richard Nixon did with his little dog. This people identified with, rather than some of the erudite people who talk above and not with the people.
Does a politician need sex appeal?
I think so. And I do think so for the women, because the women in our country are a tremendous block of votes. And I think with this cosmetic thing that's come in, the handsome man, the photogenic, and we have many politicians who have been elected on their looks and on their manner in front of a mic, in front of a television.
I believe that you're supposed to help the political figures to get rid of phoniness. What do you mean?
I don't think you can project sincerity. If it's not there, you can't do a thing about it, and people will know it. They'll know when something is said and isn't meant. There must be conviction and belief, and certain political figures have it.
Doesn't it fool the public in a sense, because we know, and this is not in any way a criticism, that President Johnson's television personality is a great deal different than his personality when he is out with the people shaking hands. And this is where he really makes an impression.
When he first came into office, he had a very good photogenic and television personality, but I think somewhere along the line, he's trying to be someone else. It may be that he's trying to be something like Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, I think that each person is himself and unique, and one should stick to that and work on one's uniqueness. Now, I think of Mr. Johnson. I've watched him lately, and it seems that he's much, much better. That somebody, he has a coach. Somebody's been coaching him.
Are you saying that, in a general sense, a man is really not himself when he's in front of the public at all? He's only himself when he's home.
Not necessarily. I think if one gets to know oneself, because there's a wonderful quote by Kierkegaard that says, the important thing is not to be this or that, but to be oneself. But you must know how to do this in front of the different media. And you must know how to do it. You can do it at home, but you must now bring it in front of that camera. You must bring it in front of a mic. You must bring it on that screen.
I believe someone once said that all people are actors. Is this true?
I think we play many roles in life. I think that if a wife, for instance, wants to get a nice gift from her husband or wants to tell him about the kids, she'll make him a nice dinner, give him a nice drink, make the setting just right to say, honey, how about that vacation this summer or something like that.
In other words, there's a little bit of ham in all of it.
I do think so.
Thank you, Michael Brown, for telling us how you help political figures with their personality problems. Mr. Brown is Associate Professor of Communication Arts at the New York Institute of Technology. This is Charlie Holmes for Monitor.
I wonder if it's true that President Johnson has been working with a coach. Of course, if you were the president, you'd probably see yourself on television enough to become conscious of your style and change it yourself, I suppose, if you felt it could be improved. Well, from the world of politics to the world of clowns, sung by Mr. Robert Goulet.
We live in a world of clowns, laughing at ups and downs, never in tune. It always seems we smile through our tears and sigh. Why can't we find, we cry, someone to fill our empty dreams? So back to the world of clowns, making our endless rounds. Oh, what a world, this world of clowns.
At 14 minutes before the hour, you're 1 minute away from a new song by Connie Francis on the Monitor Beacon. Connie Francis sings, Time Alone Will Tell.
Time alone will tell. My love for you will never end. Although I know that you must go, fate that let us meet was indiscreet to let me fall in love with you. I could never change the world we used to know. I love you so. Time alone will tell, for no one else could be as wonderful as you. Thank you.
And in addition to that new song, something else new in the life of Connie Francis this week. She's engaged. She'll be married, she says, before the year is over to Michael Caponegro. They sealed the engagement with a ring, a 12.5-carat diamond. Now that's an engagement. The Sinatras, father and daughter Nancy, sing their hit called Something Stupid.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red, and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. Your perfume fills my head, the stars get red, and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I love you.
The longhorn cattle don't roam much in this country anymore. But some of these rangy, large-boned animals with dangerous and impressive-looking horns still survive in parts of the West. Some of them are in South Dakota, where recently they provided some unexpected excitement. Carl Storjohan of Sioux Falls reports for Monitor.
Gene Olson and Frank Sharping maintain a herd of longhorns on their ranches near Chamberlain in the central part of the state. This year, they held their second annual sale. They will probably continue these sales. The auction this year will certainly be remembered by Frank Sharping because one of his steers almost killed him before the eyes of 700 people. Here is an actual recording made at the time. The opening remarks were being made by Gilbert Wagner. Two steers were let into the ring to be sold. But before the auction chant even started, well, I'll let you listen for yourself. You'll hear the bawl of the steer as he charges.
Now, this is the animals that we were speaking of as being part of the North American continent heritage that was brought in here that probably helped to do as much to make the West as anything that we had. They're a type of animal that I would hate to get caught in the open with, and he agrees with me. All right, I'll take... Look out, Frank!
Come on, man. Frank Sharpin is being attacked by a longhorn animal. They got five men trying to get him off the animal. Two guys, one on each horn. They're getting him loose. They made him loose. He's all right. All right. The other two guys can't get out of the ring. They're taking after him right now.
Shut the door.
He's all right. Mr. Sharpin is bleeding by the mouth. Appears to be all right. Yes, he is. He's all right. Two animals are now out of the ring.
The part that I was telling you just a moment ago, they are dangerous. We knew that. And this is one of the things that we want you to be very careful about being around the rail.
Mr. Sharping was standing in the ring. He was caught in a corner, and he could very easily have been killed. But like the cowboy of the Old West, he knew how to handle a situation like this. He grabbed the horns. thus keeping too close for the steer to get at him. He was cut along the nose and badly banged up. Here's what he had to say to me after it was all over.
Frank, what were you doing when this steer grabbed you?
Well, I just trying to get out of the road, I guess.
He was right up against the fence.
Yeah. I'd want to stay away from him. If he didn't want to bother me, well, I wasn't going to bother him, but I had to take a hold to keep him off of me, so I... Well, it was, I guess.
You just grabbed the whole bull horns and hung on.
Yeah.
Has this ever happened to you before?
A time or two.
You pretty worried now?
No, never bothered me a bit. No. Wife gave me worse feet than this one.
The steer was a blue roan, measuring about 5 foot at the shoulder, with horns measuring from 5 to 6 foot tip to tip. Two steers slightly larger than this one were sold to Expo 67 in Canada for exhibition this year. Frank says that Old Blue is too dangerous for anyone to own, so he'll be killed and the horns hung in the Sharping Ranch home. They'll be safe there. This is Carl Storjohn, Chamberlain, South Dakota, for Monitor.
So, if you see any longhorn cattle heading for you at Expo 67, remember to grab them by the horns. It's the friendly greeting, and there's no sense being unfriendly to a steer. Richard's Flugel Nights in the Still of the Night. Our Saturday Night Sound continues after all the latest news. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
Key to the latest news now is on the air. Key tuned for sports and views now from everywhere. From everywhere.
Would you believe a million a year? That's how many people accidentally swallow medications, cleaners, polishes, household detergents, turpentine, pesticides, and a host of similar products that would seem to be impossible. In fact, some authorities believe the figure to be higher. Most of these accidents, of course, happen to children who cannot read labels and who cannot judge which things are meant to be swallowed. Adults can protect themselves against poisoning accidents by reading the label, by storing internal medicines separately from other products, and by being sure to turn on the light before giving or taking any medication. Adults can protect young children against poisoning accidents by removing the temptation to taste. When not in immediate use, all medicines and household products should be stored in cabinets and on shelves out of reach of the toddlers. This public service announcement is brought to you by this station, cooperating with the National Planning Council for Poison Prevention Week.
WNBC, New York. The Big Voice of Big Town USA treats you to Mimi Benzel weekdays at noon.